RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
James Corbett is an award-winning investigative journalist. He started the Corbett Report website in 2007 as an outlet for independent critical analysis of politics, society, history, and economics. The Corbett Report is an independent, listener-supported alternative news source. It operates on the principle of open source intelligence and provides podcasts, interviews, articles, and videos about breaking news and important issues. We've talked about a few of those with James in the couple of appearances on this program over the past X amount of time. Of course, everything that we've talked about never goes away. So James is back with us. James, great to have you back.
Thank you for having me back on. It's always a pleasure.
It always kind of feels like just a new version of the same thing is possibly happening rather than a new actual thing.
Mm. Yes, indeed. So which aspect of the new old thing do you want to talk about?
Well, okay, let's talk about the Trump win. Maybe he'll do great, maybe he won't. Maybe he'll make America great again, but who knows? The first thing is the vote numbers. So he wins the popular vote by what, about 6 million is it now, or approaching that, I think. I think it was hovering around 5, might have gone up a bit. He had, I think, around 70, 72 million votes. Democrats lost. Yet last election, Biden gets at least 10 million more votes than Trump got, yet the victory wasn't on the numbers as strong. So what does that tell you?
It tells you precisely whatever you want it to tell you. And I mean that by saying that I have heard the people who think rah-rah Trump is going to make America great again saying, look, see, definitive proof that those 10, 20 million, whatever, extra people, dead people, people not on the voter rolls, votes appearing from nowhere was fraud in 2020. And I've heard people on team blue, is it? I don't remember yeah. The American color coding, but the Harris team going, look, see, yeah, this is definitive proof that Elon Musk stole those votes with Starlink somehow. So they've gone missing. So it proves precisely nothing except for the fact that cognitive dissonance is a hell of a drug and it will work on voters all the time, because whatever your team does is great. Whatever the other team does is bad. This is the divide and conquer stratagem. And it seems particularly odd for me, a Canadian in Japan, to be discussing the U.S. selection process with someone in New Zealand for the benefit of New Zealand listeners.
It gets to us all, James.
But let's look not at vote numbers. As an anarchist, I couldn't care less about that.
They rigged it. It's clearly they rigged it. This is really the point I was making.
I think the whole thing is a rig insofar as they pre-select the candidates. So who cares what people get to choose in a phony rigged election. But here's the fundamental point. What will this change with regards to, say, U.S. policy with regards to New Zealand? So let's look at specific New Zealand connections to the incoming administration. As your informed audience may be aware, but if not, let's bring them on board. One of the people who will be having some sway in the Trump 2024 administration is, of course, Peter Thiel. And for people who don't know, Peter Thiel was the co-founder of PayPal. He founded a company called Palantir Technologies, which data mines, snarfs up all sorts of data on every American and every person around the world to data mine, track, trace, otherwise control that for the benefit of the U.S. deep state. Their first and most important client was the CIA, but they've gone on to develop military contracts with militaries around the world. They successfully sued the U.S. Army back in 2016 in order to open up the U.S. Army's bidding process. And then, by a remarkable coincidence, after Peter Thiel became part of the Trump transition team in 2016, literally an office in Trump Tower helping to staff the Pentagon and other agencies within the administration, lo and behold, after making sure that there were high-ranking Palantir associates in the Trump Pentagon, then Palantir wins its biggest contract ever with the U.S. Army to the tune of $800 million. But all of that is by way of saying, of course, as I hope your Switched On listeners know, Peter Thiel is a New Zealand citizen.
Yeah, he got the citizenship right. In 1 week. 1 week, James.
In 2017, it came out. Peter Thiel, what? He's a New Zealand citizen because they dug up the secret records of the secret process that took place behind closed doors after Peter Thiel personally met with the Prime Minister and other high-ranking members of the New Zealand government at that time to basically buy his way into the country in a completely illegal process. I can't remember off the top of my head. I believe it's 1,350 days you have to spend within New Zealand within a five-year period or something like that in order to qualify for citizenship. Peter Thiel spent a grand total of 12 days before getting his citizenship because he came in promising to start a venture capital fund. He was investing with the New Zealand government. He was providing aid after the Christchurch earthquake, etc., etc. Hey, I'm going to be here. And oh, by the way, starting relationships between Palantir and the New Zealand government, the New Zealand military, which continued, as you know, into the scamdemic era, where part of the COVID-19 contact tracing tracking paradigm was being managed by Palantir, not only in the US, in the UK with the NHS, but also, as was later revealed, they were in talks with the New Zealand government. So 2024, Peter Thiel is not just going to be part of the Trump transition team. He is going to be a vice president. That's right. People might know the vice president, J.D. Vance, is a bought and paid for creature, totally under the thumb of Peter Thiel. He started his career in Peter Thiel's venture capital firm. He left Peter Thiel's venture capital firm to start his own venture capital firm, which was funded by Peter Thiel. And then he got into a Senate race that was funded by Peter Thiel to the tune of $15 million, the largest donation that has ever been granted in the history of U.S. Senate politics in order to get Vance in the U.S. Senate. And then Peter Thiel personally affected a rapprochement between Vance and Trump because Vance had said some naughty things about Trump during his first administration. Right. Yep. And Vance and Thiel was the one who put them together at Mar-a-Lago in 2021. Thiel is going into the White House and he is going to be directing, for example, of course, Palantir and its relationship to New Zealand and the New Zealand government. So that's one thing that's not going to change really fundamentally. If anything, it's just going to be put on steroids. Let's look at another thing that won't change fundamentally.
Well, can I ask one question? Having Thiel a citizen here, can in the room, so to speak, can that help us or is that a problem for us? Because if it's a help.
Well, I guess that's a good question. It depends on Peter Thiel's motivations and who he really is and what his ideology really is. He's one of the good billionaire oligarchs who has created this deep state mechanism for spying on everyone all the time, right? No, I color me skeptical on that point. But if people want more detail on that, I just finished a 3-part series on the strange story of Peter Thiel. And people can find out more about what ideology he does hew to. Long story short, he is a technocrat, an oligarch. He's a transhumanist, and he is not on your side. He is not, oh man, I sure hope every New Zealand citizen is wrapped in the swaddling, loving arms of my control database.
He just blew me out of the water on that.
He is a swamp dweller in chief. Welcome to Trump 2024, more of the same. But let's look at some other aspects of more of the same. Military policy. What is the U.S. military going to be doing in the Asia-Pacific? Oh, sorry, I mean the Indo-Pacific, the military now insists on calling it, right, for whatever stupid geographic, geopolitical reasons. But what are they going to be doing in the Asia-Pacific? Certainly more of the same. I think, if anything, the incoming Trump administration will probably ramp up and increase rhetoric of the Chi-Coms are coming, the Chi-Coms are coming, we must arm up against them. There is going to be a greater emphasis on ANZAC and the military response in that region to China. And I don't know about you, I'm in Japan. I think we're going to be on the front lines of World War III when it finally breaks out. Whatever China-Taiwan situation gets ginned up for the coming war, we're going to be fighting it with our blood and our lives, and the U.S. will be puppeteering things on the side, I'm sure.
Okay. RFK Jr. I see that someone, investigative journalist Whitney Webb, has written a piece that is around RFK being a sheepdog, what they call a sheepdog for MAGA in this case. And she cites, Bernie Sanders being a sheepdog for the Democrats. And I was a kind of a Bernie guy, even though I'm sitting here at the time. I thought Bernie was cool. But then you could see him welching all the way through towards the end. So RFK Jr., we're talking about authenticity and who's real and who's not. you could look at it and say, yeah, he was a sheepdog. That's exactly what he did. He rounded them up, didn't he?
It certainly seems that way. At any rate, he certainly folded his campaign and shoved it into the MAGA fold as soon as it became politically advantageous for him to do so, which makes you question to what extent he truly believed what he said about, for example, said about Trump in the past. But hey, it's politics, you know, I get it. I'm not going to prejudge anything because, one, who cares what I speculate is going to happen? What matters is what's going to happen. But two, you know, good things could happen. And if good things happen under a Trump administration, it's not like I'm going to deny that they are happening. I am just going to not hold my breath and wait for them to happen. My feeling, if people want to know my speculation, my gut feeling is that RFK was used by Trump precisely for that, to bring in those people from his contingent of independent voters into the Trump fold. And I will be surprised if he really does get in charge of FDA or USDA or some important agency. If he does and he starts taking the axe to it and starts getting rid of some of the biosecurity state, great. I'm not going to poo-poo that. I'm just not exactly hopeful that it's going to happen.
The other interesting thing, too, before we get off onto other things, or we can keep going on this, whatever you want to do, is that Kamala couldn't kind of make a case for God intervening in something she was doing, but Donald Trump could, and he did. And that's taken, I don't know for how many voters, but a good deal of them, taken them to another level where this guy has sort of a divine, I don't know, cooperation or whatever. I mean, if this was a show, that's a great, you know, part of the script. But that's an interesting aspect as well, because that's for a lot of people, that is such a strong sell.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yes, yes. And in fact, it's a well-known political phenomenon that I have talked about in the past. You say part of the script, I say ding, 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 because it is literally part of a playwright's tool belt, the Deus Ex Machina, God from a machine. It's the God comes in and saves us all. And that is what we are, that is the narrative that has been implanted in, or maybe it is just part of the human consciousness. We are always looking for that God to swoop in from the clouds to save us all. And in this case, it's Trump. If people want a breakdown of precisely how that has been used over and over and over again in the political realm, from everyone from whatever, Woodrow Wilson, all the way up to Obama, Hope and Change, Trump, you name it. I did a report on that a few years ago that got quite a bit of traction. It's called A Brief History of Hopium. It is available at CorbettReport.com/hopium, H-O-P-I-U-M, because, yes, ultimately my take is that is hopium. And just as opium is a synthetic chemical that gives you the simulacrum of peace and tranquility and happiness, but it isn't real peace and tranquility and happiness, in the same way, this hopium that is delivered through the political process, don't worry, guys, Hope and Change Obama is going to make everything better. And people put their entire identity in it. They believe in it with all their might. They vote as hard as they can. And then, no, it doesn't quite work out. So you better vote harder next time. And if people want to know about that treadmill and where it ultimately leads, I would suggest they watch my Hopium video.
Okay, line in the sand for mainstream media. It's dead now, is it? Over and out pretty well. This was the line that in history we'll look back and say, it happened there.
I would like to think so. I certainly do think that we have crossed the threshold. Exactly when we cross that threshold is perhaps a matter of perspective. But at any rate, we are crossing it at the moment. And there's no doubt, there is no doubt that what we have lived through over the past few decades is a communication revolution, the likes of which we haven't seen since at the very least the time of Gutenberg, perhaps ever in human history. And the fact that I am here talking to you and to those people in New Zealand who might be listening to this, that is an incredible, unbelievable phenomenon that I still pinch myself every day that I get up in front of this microphone and talk to however many tens or hundreds of thousands of people around the world, just me, some English teacher in Japan. Like, what is this? How did this happen?
That sounds like a movie title.
It really is. In fact, I wouldn't want to make it about myself, but I see it obviously from my perspective. I truly understand the revolution that we've lived through in a way that I'm sure the average person may not personally understand it or have felt it. But it has literally changed my life and the lives of many, many, many people around the world. Not only people doing this, but people who are now exposed to information, unfiltered, raw information from all around the world in a way that would have been utterly impossible of even a few decades ago. And I think we still haven't even begun to appreciate the tectonic changes in human civilization that this change will bring about, in the same way that the Gutenberg press absolutely transformed the world in ways we still don't even begin to appreciate. Not just the Reformation, which, oh, by the way, was probably largely due to the printing press, but fundamental transformation of society, even the way that we structure, the way that we think about and approach the world. And if you want the real deep dive on that, go to a fellow Canadian countryman of mine, Marshall McLuhan, who wrote about understanding media. He talked about the way that literacy, the literate society that came in post-Gutenberg, literally reordered our understanding of the world itself. Suddenly, we are scanning lines of information that are composed of particles, letters that are arranged into words in linear text that, as one order of analysis, we could say is the basis for the scientific revolution that took place. Suddenly, we see the world not as a whole, not as an organic whole, but as constituent elements that can be pried apart and put together and rearranged in different ways. For whatever good or ill that has done for humanity, at any rate, I think there is a direct link between the literate mind and the ability to manipulate the world around us in that way. And that's just the beginning of what that revolution did 500 plus years ago. What is this revolution today going to do and shape the mind of humanity in the future? Well, that's yet to be determined, but I can tell you, we are living through an incredible revolution right now.
And the same people, the same class of people try and shut it down.
Exactly.
Try and limit the access and shut the press, you know.
Of course. The Licensing Act in England in the 17th century, of course. The first thing that kings and tyrants want to do is to stop people from communicating. So that's exactly what happened, for example. And I've got Areopagitica on my bookshelf there. Of course, people were writing about this, talking about this. Freedom of speech. This is the most important thing of our lifetime. This Licensing Act cannot stand, but it did for many, many decades. But actually, the most insidious thing that the tyrants did was ultimately to realize you cannot cork that bottle. People are going to communicate. What you want to do is to ultimately control and find a way to get people back into a paradigm of information control, which is exactly what happened as the mass media market started to consolidate into a business phenomenon that ultimately in the 20th century reached its zenith in the famous five or six corporations that controlled everything that you read and saw and heard on a daily basis. Well, we're heading back towards that kind of centralization, even online, as everyone starts to congregate in Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and these gigantic big tech oligopoly, which is increasingly becoming the internet for a lot of people. And I, for one, am trying to ring the alarm bell about that. Hey, guys, we don't have to go down that road. We still have a relatively free and open internet with peer-to-peer communication really being a true thing that we can actually take advantage of. Let's not all congregate in one or two places online. But sometimes it feels like screaming against the wind.
Speaking of tectonic plates, meantime, you've got Vladimir Putin, the BRICS nations, a good chunk of the global GDP, wanting to move away from the US dollar and the hegemony and all of that. Yet looking at Kazan, where they had their get-together and the declaration, most of what Western people who are grumpy, I'm one of them, complain about, they support sustainable development goals, Agenda 2030, UN Convention on Climate Change, Paris Agreement, goes on and on. So for a moment there, you're thinking, oh, this could be interesting. This could be an alternative, but it doesn't seem to be.
Unfortunately, would that it were so. Would that it were so, but it is not. And I hate to be the bearer of bad news, because that's never a popular position to be in. But anyway, here we are. And I found it a fascinating phenomenon that I read a lot about the Kazan Declaration at the time, which had occurred last month. And there was a lot of people writing about it. And, oh, this is, you know, the BRICS are rising and they're going to take on the evil, you know, U.S.-led coalition and all of this. But not a single one of those writers actually linked to the declaration itself. I had to go to a writer who was not in favor of this declaration to find a link to the declaration itself. Specifically, Edward Slavsquat is a blogger, Riley Wagaman. He blogs under the name Edward Slavsquat on Substack. And he wrote a post, "Would you like to know what BRICS just declared?" And he was the one who not only linked up the actual declaration, but then broke it down piece by piece so that you can read in their own words, talking about the wonders of the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development and this reaching the Sustainable Development Goals and creating carbon markets to appease the weather gods. And every single piece of the globalist monstrosity that people say that they're against is exactly word for word parroted in this Kazan Declaration. They're on board with every single part of this agenda, 110%. And this isn't an isolated phenomenon. I've been talking about it for years. I had a podcast a few years ago, CorbettReport.com/Putin, P-U-T-I-N. Go there. And I was talking about a declaration, a joint declaration between China and Russia of a few years ago that, in that podcast, I pretended for the first few minutes of the podcast, oh, this is Justin Trudeau and Joe Biden have just done this joint declaration. And look at all, yeah, of course, UN Agenda 2030. And oh, of course, they're talking about carbon markets and they're talking about this. And then I revealed, oh, wait, sorry, this is actually a joint Putin-Xi Russia-China declaration. And can you tell the difference? Of course you can't, because they're all saying the exact same things. I noted, since I pointed this out about the Kazan Declaration a couple of weeks ago, I've noted some of those writers that are, yay, yay, BRICS are going to save us, have now decided to link, after I talked about it, they've linked to the Kazan Declaration in their latest articles to say, oh, yeah, 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 they say this stuff, but they don't really mean it. They just have to say it to keep the globalists off their back. But they're really not going to do that, guys. Yeah. So this is where we've landed, unfortunately.
Yeah. So really, it's what's the difference in the end? I guess Putin has to deal with Trump now, and Trump likes to make himself out to be unpredictable, right? Yeah. You know, you don't quite know what he's going to do. But actually, being unpredictable is a predictable thing, actually, in its own right. So how do you see globally? I mean, you mentioned that you feel like you could be on the front line of something if anything kicks off.
Unfortunately so. I mean, hey, we're biased here being in the Asia Pacific, so obviously we're keeping more of an eye on what's going on over here. But I would say that China, clearly, in the big sweep of things, clearly NATO and Russia are obviously at loggerheads on a number of issues, and that something very well could kick off between them. But I think China is more of the, when I look at this, I see the World War I parallels with the rising Huns threatening the British Empire. And in this case, the rising Huns are the Chinese threatening the American Empire. And unfortunately, due to Thucydides' trap, which people, historians might know, is this theory that's been developed that basically every time you have a rising power that's threatening an established power on the global stage, there, well, not every time, but most times, there's going to be war. And unfortunately, that is exactly what played out in World War One. If people want to know the real story of World War One, how it really developed, I did a documentary called The World War One Conspiracy that people can check into. And similarly, I think that there are also forces that are puppeteering this potential U.S.-China conflict. But nonetheless, I think the conflict itself would be, if it kicked off, very real. And real people
and
would die.
Epic.
Real
It'd
human
be
beings
epic,
would lose their lives
it?
As a result.
Epic, because you've got one point, how many, 6 billion now? Is it in China? Or it's in that ballpark.
Yeah.
U.S.
Yeah.
is... Okay, smaller than that population-wise,
yeah, exactly,
but
they
got all the weapons.
And in fact, this is the point that's it's difficult for us to get our heads around. But I look at it through the lens of, say, a World War I scenario where World War I truly looked absolutely nothing like warfare that came before it. It was so different than any other type of warfare that the world had ever seen that people, there was no strategies in place. The generals had to kind of make it up as they were going because it was so completely different. The machine gun, the tank, ultimately the airplane starting to have an effect in World War I, obviously more of an effect in World War II. But these things fundamentally changed warfare as we know it. And unfortunately, not for the better for the vast majority of humanity. Back in the 18th century, you could literally go to the battlefield and you could have a picnic and watch the armies fighting each other. You're not doing that in World War I, right? The citizenry becomes an important part of the target. So I think if and when a World War III scenario truly kicks off, a hot war scenario, it will, I don't know what it will look like, but I know it will look nothing like warfare that we have seen in the past, especially with not only the technology we know is already being prepared by all of these militaries, but the ones that we don't know that will be unleashed on the public in the event of
laser
such a,
weapons from space, James.
Rods from God, gods from rods from God. Right?
Yeah. It's been great catching up with you again. Thanks for making some time for us.
I very much appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
And just final thing for folk who hearing you for the first time or have heard of you but want to go and hear more, see more, whatever, what's the best place to go, James?
All right. My name is James Corbett, and I am at CorbettReport.com. That is CorbettReport.com. I'm also on some other video sharing platforms and what have you, but my website's the best place to go.
All right. Good luck. I hope you being on the front line doesn't get too hairy. We'll hear about it anyway. We'll get a first-hand report. Thank you. See ya.
Thank you very much. Take care.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more, the RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.